I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway.
The Trump impeachment inquiry goes public this week, a new, huge, critical, key, and unpredictable chapter of enormous consequence.
Impeachment is a very serious matter. The Founding Fathers said it was a very serious matter, and so it ought to be public.
You're going to impeach a president for asking for a favor that didn't happen and giving money and it wasn't withheld? I don't know what you would impeach him on.
The president broke the law. This is a very strong case of bribery.
Tell Mr. Trump, release your tax returns or be quiet. Be quiet. You're worried about corruption. Deal with it in your own house.
I will say I'm pretty sure how it's likely to end. If it were today, I don't think there's any question. It would not lead to a removal.
Those open hearings will be an opportunity for the American people to evaluate the witnesses for themselves, to make their own determinations about the credibility of the witnesses, but also to learn firsthand about the facts of the president's misconduct.
I've written the whole process off. I've written him off. I think this is a bunch of BS.
They seem to be incapable of forming a quid pro quo.
I'm sure it was fine. I mean, you know, I make a lot of calls, but I have no problem releasing it. I'm very transparent.
This week, a new phase in the impeachment inquiry begins. Starting on Wednesday, the nation will be able to watch impeachment hearings broadcast from Capitol Hill. William Taylor, the top U.S. diplomat to Ukraine, and George Kent, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for European and Eurasian Affairs, will be the first to publicly testify about the alleged efforts of President Donald Trump to pressure the Ukrainian government into investigating Joe Biden and his son Hunter. Their testimonies, followed by former Ukrainian Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch on Friday, mark a turning point after weeks of closed-door hearings conducted by the House's Intelligence Committee. Defenders of President Trump have characterized the proceedings so far as little more than political theater.
This is Soviet-style rules.
But opponents say this is democracy in action.
I think it's a good idea to make the hearings public, and people will then have to make their decisions.
The public won't just be reading about it in the New York Times or tuning into ABC or CBS. They'll also be seeing it play out in real time on social media platforms like Twitter and splashed across chyrons and cable news channels.
A new, huge, critical, key, and unpredictable chapter.
As the public hearings take over the news cycle, journalists will need to take a long, hard look at how we're covering the proceedings and how we can do better. Margaret Sullivan is a media columnist at The Washington Post. Margaret, always great to have you here.
Thank you, Tanzina.
And also with us is Brian Stelter, the host of Reliable Sources and CNN's chief media correspondent. Brian, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
Lots to talk about. We just heard all of the intrigue, if you will, Brian. We're hearing that these public hearings are the start of a new phase in the impeachment inquiry. How is the game going to be changed?
I think because this will now be televised live everywhere, radio, television, streaming, this will be impossible to ignore. Well, at least to the extent that anything is impossible to ignore in the digital age. This is the first internet impeachment. It's the first social media impeachment. It's the first impeachment since Fox News was a powerful force in the nation. And this is going to be the kind of event that gets remixed and distorted and clipped in all these different ways. But at its core, having these live hour-long hearings will, I think, start to bring a lot more clarity to what has been a kind of confusing story.
And Brian, the House is starting the hearings with two witnesses.
Right.
As we mentioned, Ambassador Taylor and Assistant Secretary Kent. What are the optics of these two officials testifying together?
Yeah.
Like, is that going to make it more difficult for journalists to cover?
Somewhat more difficult, but I think it's important. I think what the Democrats are trying to do is show that there are many officials throughout government that were all alarmed by the president's conduct, all trying to speak out, all telling a consistent story. And although there's a lot of names to keep up with, a lot of testimony that's already come out, that's a lot to keep up with, the story is pretty consistent.
Margaret, you, in your latest column in The Washington Post, you outlined some recommendations for how journalists can best cover the hearings. It's been a contentious couple of years for news media in the political cycle. What mistakes would you like to see journalists avoid going forward?
Well, one of the things, Tanzina, that I think that we've been struggling with in the Trump era is the president and before that Trump as a candidate, his ability to distract and to sort of, I like to say, serve as the media's de facto assignment editor to say, well, actually look over here at this shiny object. And I think in this case, The American public deserves to have a pretty, you know, singular focus on what's happening in these hearings, not, you know, what might be happening in on the sidelines.
We hear a lot about phrases like quid pro quo, for example. Should journalists be using phrases like that in their reporting? Should they be talking about them as a euphemism? Should they include them at all outside of quotes?
So, I don't think that most people – I actually had 4 years of high school Latin, so I, you know, kind of know what it means literally. I don't think if you a couple of weeks ago, if you went around asking people what that meant, they wouldn't know. I think they do know what it means now, this for that, basically. There are people who think that, you know, the words bribery and extortion are more appropriate, and I think they've got a point.
What have journalists been doing right, Margaret, if anything?
Well, journalists have done a lot right in the past couple of years. They've dug up a lot of what's happened. They've broken through the difficulties of covering an administration that, although the president claims to be transparent, you know, there hasn't been a press briefing, a so-called daily press briefing in more than 6 months. And yet journalists who cover the White House and who cover issues surrounding the federal government have been able to pretty much tell American citizens what's going on. And I think there's great credit for them in that.
Brian, we talked about the language and quid pro quo, but let's talk a little bit about Trump and his allies. What's the message or the narrative that they are trying to deliver to the media so far?
Yeah, I think through sheer force of repetition, President Trump and his allies are trying to convince everyone that this entire scandal is about a single phone call. And the president calls it a perfect phone call. He's basically daring anyone, any of his supporters, not to believe it's a perfect phone call. By the way, as Jeffrey Toobin said on CNN yesterday, who goes around saying their own behavior is perfect? You know, who goes around saying their own phone calls are perfect? Some of this is ludicrous. But the president is trying to convince people that this is all about a single phone call, when in fact it's about a months-long effort to have a shadow foreign policy led by Rudy Giuliani, in order to extort a foreign power for the president's reelection bid. Look, I think journalists have to keep bringing those facts back to the table and make sure we don't get too lost in the fog that the president wants to create. Look, he was tweeting more than 2 dozen times just on Monday. I'm sure he'll tweet 2 dozen times again today. He's actually been tweeting more and more and more every month. He's trying to yell more loudly as this scandal deepens. And we have to cut through that fog every day.
Who are we speaking to? Because there seem to be different camps here. And we know that there are folks who, you know, Trump's base and Trump's support, I should say, hasn't really wavered since he's taken office. It's hovered around 40%. Are those the folks that the president is trying to talk to, or is he trying to convince a broader public that he had nothing impeachable here?
Well, right? Margaret mentioned the lack of press briefings. That's a sign of weakness on the part of the White House, but it's also a sign that this White House is not trying to convince 100% of the American people. They're really only speaking to the base. There's a reason why the press secretary, Stephanie Grisham, only goes on Fox News and Sinclair, because she's only trying to reassure the president's supporters to stay with him. She's not trying to persuade anyone else to give him a chance sort of think differently. Look, I think what we see in the polls is this incredibly high disapproval of the president, let me put it this way. We don't see a lot of people who are lukewarm about the president. They either strongly approve or they strongly disapprove. About 3 in 10 Americans strongly approve. About 5 in 10 Americans strongly disapprove. Will those numbers change? Perhaps not. But if only 10% shifts, if only 1 in 10 Americans shift, that can have profound consequences in this impeachment, because Republican senators, who ultimately are the ones that are going to decide whether the president stays or goes, they are watching those numbers very carefully.
And Margaret, to that point, I mean, who are journalists thinking about, or should they be thinking about, when they're reporting right now? Because as we said, the president's base has been pretty consistent. You know, it's a pretty polarized moment right now. You know, is there such a thing as a false equivalency in terms of reporting this impeachment right now?
So I think that we have to report the facts and do our best to communicate what's happening without really thinking too hard about whether, gee, are we going to get through to Trump's base or anything like that. It's not our job to think that way. I will say that, as someone who's written a lot about Trump in the media, I hear a lot and have heard a lot from people who are strong President Trump defenders, and they're very angry at the news media. They're very angry at the mainstream media, or the, as I like to call it, the reality-based press. I don't think we can get bogged down in that. We've got to talk to people as if they were, and many, many people are, American citizens who are hungry for information and, you know, let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, I would just add to that. I would say it's the challenge for Democratic politicians and for other politicians to convince people to change their minds, to try to win over Trump supporters. Leave that to the politicians. I think we in the press, though, have to recognize that we are existing in these alternative, in these competing universes of information. And that's what's going to make this impeachment process different from the Nixon or the Clinton years. Even in the Clinton impeachment, Fox News was a very small channel, very low-rated channel. And the internet was basically just a text medium, really not a social media medium at all. So we are now in these competing universes of information. And I think we have to be aware of that and cognizant of that and know what is being said in the Fox News universe. But I agree with Margaret that, you know, our job is not to persuade, it's to inform.
And, you know, to that point, again, we're talking about Fox Media and Fox News. You know, we've seen this strategy by conservative media and the president in terms of undermining the credibility of certain witnesses, the latest example being Colonel Alexander Vindman during the closed-door proceedings. Do you think, Margaret, we'll see more of that going forward in this impeachment inquiry?
Yes, this is absolutely, you know, Trump's methodology is to, you know, counterpunch, to disparage. I mean, he learned it at the knee of Roy Cohn. And, you know, it's always never admit wrongdoing and always go on the attack. So we will see that. And it's going to happen more and more. And that's, you know, we have to know that and sort of, you know, I think we can write about it. I think we can take it on. But again, as Brian says, it's not our role to persuade. It's our role to tell the story. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a very challenging time. I will say that despite all the attention on social media, and Brian's absolutely right about how we live in a different media sphere now, I do think that the televised aspect of seeing these witnesses or spokespeople who are credible and who have a strong background will be very persuasive for people. I think that the televised medium is a powerful one, even if it's cut up into pieces by social media and, you know, we see it in bits and pieces. It's still going to make a huge difference in terms of people hearing it and truly getting it for the first time.
Brian, how is CNN planning to tackle the televised hearings so far? I mean, what are we throwing everything at this?
Yeah, there's going to be even more hours of live coverage than usual. I think I'm booked for 1 a.m. on Thursday morning.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Certainly, you know, this is going to be a wall-to-wall on all the networks, including Fox News, by the way, lest anyone wonder if they're going to ignore all of this. We're going to see this on the broadcast networks, on cable, on radio, of course, as well. And, you know, in this internet age, we're going to see this on Twitter and Facebook, and we're going to see this remixed and condensed and clipped by both partisans and by journalists, by people trying to sum it all up. You know, because the reality is most people don't watch these things wall to wall the entire time. Even the Michael Cohen hearing or the James Comey testimony a couple of years ago, you know, about 20 million people tend to watch these things live in real time. But everybody else soaks it up like a sponge a little bit later. And I think what you ask yourself in that case is, what main messages are Democrats going to get across? You know, are they going to be talking about abuse of power? Are they going to be talking about fitness for office? For me, just as a citizen, this is fundamentally about truth and lies. Truth, whether the president's trustworthy, whether he's abusing his office. And I'm curious to see if the Democrats are able to put on a quote-unquote good show.
Well, let me put
because
to that point,
honestly,
though,
it is a television show, right, as well as a test for democracy.
So let's talk about that, because there are some journalists who say, you know, don't cover this like a game show.
Right.
And Brian, you faced some of this over the weekend
Twitter. I did.
Some people were like not happy with how you describe what was coming up. So how do you respond to that?
I think there's two levels of this that are both true. On one level, this is a really serious test for democracy. And you know, obviously, I think the country's in a crisis mode because we have a president that is so deceptive. So that is true. It's a test for democracy. But at the same time, it's also a television show. And I think we have to view both as true at the same time. And so the challenge for the Democrats and the Republicans is what kind of show are they going to put on? Are they going to hook people in the first episode? You may hate that we live in this environment. That
people hate it.
And some people do. And sometimes I do as well. But, you know, I think we have to recognize that the Congress is competing with Netflix when these hearings begin, competing with podcasts, competing with all of these other forms of media that are out there. And I think the Democrats know that, by the way. A House leadership aide said to CNN's Lauren Fox, we know the first hour has to be explosive. We know the first hour has to hook people.
That's what got you in trouble on Twitter, Brian.
But that's a House leadership aide being quoted out there.
All right.
But look, I get it. I mean, hopefully people will judge what happens at these hearings on the merits and not on the performance.
So, Margaret, to that point, I mean, there are so many different areas that this is going to be covered in, so many different ways to watch and read. I'll give you two examples. We heard even Rudy Giuliani is talking about starting his own impeachment podcast among the, 50 impeachment podcasts that are out there. How are those channels, if at all, likely to cloud the debate? Are there people who are going to be listening to that Giuliani podcast or the one podcast and ignoring the rest, or is it just going to be too much?
Well, we do tend to be in our echo chambers for sure, and to seek out, you know, the commentators, the news coverage that sort of supports what we already think. But I think there's going to be something at a higher or maybe a deeper level than that. One thing that I find really interesting, just as a sort of a window into how people are seeing things, is to watch the evening news on ABC, NBC, and CBS every night, and I kind of move around among them, because that's a very tight half hour that's reaching more than 20 million people every night, and it'll be high now because people will be tuning in. How are they covering it? And then I think you see the distilled messages that are actually getting through, and it should be very interesting to watch.
There's also this little world of book publishing that gets a lot of attention. John Bolton reportedly has a $2 million book deal in the works. Authors weep when they hear that type of advance. and of course, there's Anonymous, who just has his, or their, I should say, high-level Trump administration official releasing this tell-all this month.
Right.
What's the impact of those narratives, Margaret?
Well, I mean, they do affect people. And, you know, we see these books, you know, fly to the top of the bestseller list often. I think they also are part of the echo chamber, that people who are, you know, buying Don Jr.'s book or, you know, whatever it may be, are to some extent have their minds made up. I think that these televised hearings and what comes out of them is going to be a little bit different, and to be able to get to people who are – and I do think there are people who are still – if not in the middle, people who are not completely convinced and would like more information.
Brian, to that point, and go ahead, respond.
I was thinking about one of the great things about the country that we live in is that you can choose not to care. You don't have to vote. You don't have to pay attention. You don't even have to listen to the news.
But do you have a choice, though? It's everywhere.
it feels like it is everywhere, but some people tune it out, and they have the ability to tune out and the right to tune it out. And in a moment like this, when there's been scandal headlines for 6 weeks and impeachment talks behind closed doors for 6 weeks, it's been pretty easy to actually tune it out if you want to, if you just want to watch Netflix and listen to podcasts and do the rest. It is different when there are televised hearings. It does make it harder to ignore. And I think that is why this moment does matter. Because, some people will still tune it out. Some people have made up their minds. But I agree with Margaret that there are some who aren't as dug in as we may think, or as the polling may even indicate. You know, people talk in a negative way about low information voters. I think that's oftentimes as a derogatory perception, but let's just call them casual, voters, casual news consumers who don't care every second of every day about the news. When they look up at the television and they see these hearings, it may make a difference.
So you think, Brian, in about 30 seconds, you think people will be watching the actual hearings on television or the
not
distilled
everybody,
version?
But enough. But enough will. And we don't know what we don't know. We don't know what surprises the Democrats may have in store. We don't know what surprises the Republicans might have in store. And we don't know how this is going to end. I think anybody who tries to tell you they know how this is going to end, or whether the president's going to be in office in a year, or whether he's going to be reelected, nobody knows.
You
and that kind of American mystery that does compel people.
And to Margaret's point, don't make predictions, right?
Don't make predictions.
We can't tell. Brian Stelter, host of Reliable Sources and CNN's chief media correspondent, and Margaret Sullivan, media columnist at The Washington Post. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
This is Elizabeth Abraham from St. Petersburg, Florida. And I am going to be watching the hearings, the impeachment hearings. I want to make sure that things seem fair and objective and that they're not just kind of one-sided. The whole country can see that we are following the Constitution and doing the best thing that we can.
This is Ron Little Rock. I will not be watching because I have a job. And the only thing this place is missing is a kangaroo to go with the court. There is no law broken. There's no reason for impeachment. It's a waste of time.
This is Jose Luis Moscovich from San Francisco, California, and I do intend to watch as much as possible of the impeachment proceedings. The main question I have is, can we impose jail time on government officials who refuse to cooperate with Congress? That, I think, would send a clear signal that there's no impunity to be gained from trying to game the process.
8778 My Take is our number. This is The Takeaway.